This is May 15th, 1991, and I'm Calder Pickett, and this is going to be an interview with Carol Edwards, who retired a number of years ago after a long career here in the English department at the University of Kansas. I haven't known Carol well myself in a personal way, but I always feel that I have because his wife and my wife have been playing bridge together in the same group for, I think it must be more than 30 years now. I'm pretty sure it goes back into the 1950s, which means that I've always known about the Edwards family and some of the things they've been doing and so on. Carol, I'm going to start you at the beginning in a way the same way that David Copperfield begins, and ask you to talk a little bit about your childhood, your date of birth, and where you were born, who your parents were, a little bit about them, and a little bit about your family, if you had any brothers and sisters and so on, and then we will move up more into more recent times.
All right. Okay. I'm going to start out with my birth.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was born in Davenport, Oklahoma, 1909, a long time ago, on a farm. And I had a sister. There were seven of us in the family, and I had a sister who got tuberculosis. And in that day, tuberculosis was ordinarily, almost had to say ordinarily, it was fatal. So my mother had heard that she moved out west, climate would help you with tuberculosis. So we moved out west to Colorado, Homestead in Colorado, in eastern Colorado. And my father, who knew nothing whatever about land in the west, homesteaded on 160 acres. And I had two sisters who were mature, and they also filed to claim 260 acres. But in Colorado, on that land, you need about 20,000 acres to make a living. So we didn't stay there very long, but we had some interesting experiences. At the very end of the frontier, there were still an awful lot of antelopes, and a lot of deer. When you went to the nearest store, was 8 miles, and it was just a station on the railroad.
What town were you near? What
Trinidad, Colorado.
Oh, down there in the that's down the southeast, isn't it?
That's right. Trinidad, Colorado, which was 70 miles away. And so we, my father hired a whole boxcar from Davenport, Oklahoma, and rode with all the stock up to Thatcher, Colorado, where he got off, and then we drove the cattle over 8 miles to the homestead. And we built a adobe house. Was the standard material for edifices in those days. Built an adobe house, but showing his lack of knowledge of the way you build an adobe house, he built a two-story adobe house. Nobody ever built a two-story adobe house. And we had a dirt floor for the kitchen. It's not quite as bad as it might seem to you, because that dirt gets hard as concrete. You sweep it out with a broom just like you would concrete. Well, we stayed there, and I have some pleasant memories of the about 7 months that we were out there. We lived in a tent at first, and there were rattlesnakes. We had to go out and drive the cattle in at night, and there were rattlesnakes galore, and one of our neighbors, homesteaders, had a cigar box full of rattles really taken from rattlers. And so we stayed there until the fall, and then there was no school near at all. The nearest one was Trinidad, so my mother decided again that she would move into Trinidad so we could go to school. So we had a covered wagon. Must have been one of the last of the covered wagons. Took the covered wagon and drove it the 70 miles into Trinidad with all the stock. So after we moved into Trinidad, went to school there through the 8th grade in the public school, and then began to play hooky when I went to the ninth grade in Trinidad. And my mother, who had a Ulster Protestant notion of Catholicism, among other things, assuming that Catholics were strict, and that if she sent me to the Catholic school there, they would be strict enough to keep me attending. And so I enrolled in the Catholic school and had a very fine experience with Catholics.
Did you have good teachers?
Yeah, real fine. They were dedicated nuns, really dedicated, you know, and their whole life was their students and religion, and that was it. They wore the Sisters of Charity and wore the 17th century costumes of the Sisters of Charity, the black gown which goes on down to the ground. So I went there for 4 years, played basketball, and then decided to go on to college. So we rode around and finally decided to go to Southwestern College in southern Kansas. So we drove down in the Model T. Meantime, the older sisters had got married and they stayed in Colorado. And so I came to Southwestern.
What town is that in?
That's Winfield, Kansas.
That down there around Wichita, or?
Yeah, southwest of Wichita, north of Arcad City. Yeah. Between Arcad City and Wichita. Yeah, I had four years at Southwestern. And a couple of years after I'd graduated from Southwestern, I wanted to read poetry more, so I wrote to Iowa and asked about attending graduate school there. Was accepted. So I went over 4 years, I guess, to Iowa. Got a PhD in English, and that's the extent of my education.
Carol, how did you said that you got interested in poetry. Do you have any feeling or idea about what it was that got you started in being interested in literature? I mean, did you have many books in your home? Or?
Yeah, that was it. We were almost very poor when I was a kid, but my mother was absolutely obsessed with the notion of education. And so she, no matter how little money we had, she always had money for books of poetry and Compton's Pictured Encyclopedia for us to read, and encouraged us to read poetry. So we had a lot of books of poetry around the house, and she liked it too. And in those days, there was a lot more memorization than there is these days. My mother had memorized a lot of poetry, such as old Byron's poem, you know, on Waterloo. It is the cannon's opening roar. And my mother would recite those with all the rhetorical flourishes, you know, of early 20th century rhetoric.
St. Agnes Eve, how bitter chill it was.
Yeah, that's right.
That was one I memorized at one time. And
yeah.
The Vision of Sir Launfal.
Yes, that's one you always read.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I continued that interest, finally got a PhD in it, and then went to, got a job at Oklahoma State University in Stillwater.
Now, about when was this?
This was about 1940 when I went to Stillwater.
Did the Depression years hit you in any significant way?
Boy, they hit everybody. That's a strange thing. You can't communicate that spirit of the Depression to people who've never experienced it. You could see no end to it. Now you read this pabulum in the newspaper, this recession is bound to be short-lived. Well, this one went on year after year, and you could see no end to it, and it looked as if life was going to be like that. And I mean, you were on the razor's edge between having enough food to eat. It wasn't that you were deprived of some luxuries, but you had to struggle in order to get enough food to eat, and you had to struggle in order to get enough money to pay the rent. And there simply was no work. You just could not get hold of any money. And I think, on the other hand, it had some good aspects to it. I think it kind of solidifies the family, because you spend more time at home. And in those days, the girls were always taught to play the piano, so you stand around the piano and sing songs. And we weren't the consumers then that they are now. The consumer ideas, you see, which is apparently taking possession of the whole world. Everybody in the world wants to be middle class. And I think that we were above that in the Depression, and we had more solid tastes.
Well, you know, we also, I don't know how it would have, of course it wouldn't have been this way in the big cities, but in the smaller towns, we had vegetable gardens, raising many of the things that we ate.
Yeah.
And kids got out and got jobs, and this was something that you had to do. I think everybody I knew.
Yeah.
Had a job of some kind.
Yeah, that's right.
So you, 1940. My gosh, that was a long time ago. You got your PhD in 1940.
Yeah.
And you went from there to Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
Let me stop it for a minute here. When does Virgie enter the story for you?
Well, Virgie enters the story when I went to University of Iowa. We were both enrolled in an old English class, met each other, and that's what started the whole thing. And
where was she from?
She was from Illinois, near Peoria, near Peoria. But we both liked poetry and both liked literature, so this was a sort of bond between us.
Who were the? Were there any teachers that you had then who stand out in your memory?
Yes, I think that's be a pretty poor student who didn't have teachers which stood out in his memory. I think we all remember I don't like to say favorite teachers, but we like to remember teachers who had some influence on us. And we had two then. One was Henny Larsen, a Norwegian, who had come over and who taught Old English. And he was a commanding sort of guy, great big, and absolutely formal in his Old English class. I don't think you could get away with it anywhere in the world, the formality of Henning Larson's English class. And then there was E.N.S. Thompson, who was a Milton specialist. And there were others that you remember. I had a good experience at Iowa, very pleasant, and I thought that I learned something.
How did you find your way into Old English? Isn't that a rather esoteric?
Well, it didn't used to be. It'd be now, but at that time, if you were going to get your MA and your PhD, you had to take either Greek, Old English, or Latin. So Virgin and I decided that we would take Latin. You had to have a reading knowledge of those, more than reading knowledge.
Well, that is, it is essentially another language.
A foreign language, yeah, a tough foreign language, too. Old English is a tough foreign language.
When I was looking at your stuff here, I guess I should have known, but I didn't know that Chaucer was your specialty. Chaucer was about the only English class I didn't take when I was in college. It just seemed that it was going to be too tough, and I didn't have an English major, but I would have had I taken Chaucer.
Yeah, I see. Well, that's there used to be figures in English that it was de rigueur for you to take. If you were going to major in English, you had to take those figures. They were standard. Nationwide, you had to take these figures, but I guess that's loosening now. You have a lot more emphasis on diversity in what you're supposed to take.
Well, I'm rather inclined to think that people should, that there's some basic things that people should take, and I would think that in English that there are some things that everybody should have.
Yeah, well, the thing of it is, you see, what bears down upon the present student body is the fact that the Prince of Wales and the Vepos went down in the Second World War. Went down to Davy Jones' locker. That is why students do not take the standard figures anymore. You see, before the Prince of Wales and the Repulse, Britannia ruled the waves. And Britannia ruling the waves could certify that minor figures of 17th century were excellent and should be studied. They could put their stamp on it, you know. But art follows the flag. And when England went down, then so did English departments as we used to know them. Now, they might say, well, I don't know, maybe a modern Greek novel is as good as Jane Austen or something like that. We need diversity. But you didn't need diversity when you had, when Britannia ruled the waves. You tried to follow what you thought was the leader. And so I'm rather glad that I got out of the profession when I did, because it'd be awfully hard for me to adjust myself to the present study of English.
Have you seen these columns I've written for the Journal of the World lately about that very subject?
Yeah.
About what's happening? I know it's an old-fashioned attitude, but I find a lot of people I've been talking with think that what I've been saying is right.
Yeah, I know. The thing, you and I know that there's been a decline, but the young don't know that there's been a decline. The young always assume that their age is the greatest of ages. And so they don't worry about it the way you and I would worry about it. We know that Shakespeare is greater than any other English literary figure. We just know it. But they don't know it anymore. It has something to do with authority, in a way. It has something to do with authority. I think that the young don't want any kind of authority, whether it's Shakespeare or whether it's the state or whatever it is. They simply do not want authority. So, not much we can do. You get some comfort in the knowledge of the fact that no declining nation ever realized that it was declining. Corinth, which was one of the most decadent cities that ever existed back in Paul's time, it didn't know that it was corrupt, didn't know that it was declining, just assumed that everything was as it should be. And I think that's the way with our own time. Most of the evidence that I can see shows evidence of a decline. But those who are younger than I and who are immersed in it, they don't see any evidence of decline at all.
Did you ever mix this kind of stuff up on your in the English faculty meetings and so on, or when course requirements were being dealt with and new courses proposed and so on?
Yeah. When I first came here, I supervised English 1, 2, 3, and 4. I had 12 hours of English then. And in those 4 semesters, I put in what was called established the reading list for those courses, and they included the Bible and Plato and the Greek plays and Shakespeare and Milton. And we even thought that the novel was too trivial to be put into a university course, so we didn't include the novel in any of the reading list. But that, it didn't last. It didn't last. Well, it lasted for 10 years or so. But it didn't last because they said the students didn't like it as much as they should. They thought, can it be easier if we had more popular works? So we began to teach what we call genre literature. You know, one semester they have poetry, and the next semester they have the novel, and the next semester plays, and so on. But the caliber of the reading list declined drastically from then. Mm-hmm. So there isn't much you can do about mm-hmm. when an old system, you know, is in a decline. There isn't really very much you can do about it.
How many years did you spend at Oklahoma State?
Oh, let's see, 3 years, I guess. 3 years. 1 year before the war and 2 years after the war.
Now, I saw and you hear that you went in the Air Corps.
Yeah.
In 1942, you were in for 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. We had, Virgie and I had gone to a movie, and we got out of the movie. We heard that Japan had attacked Pearl Harbor. And we both knew that life, as we had known it, that was gone. We recognized instinctively it wouldn't be like that again. And so, maybe a year later, not a year later, maybe a few months later, the Air Corps was looking for instructors who would teach bombing. And they would teach also the ground school, you see. And they wanted experienced people, so they commissioned us directly from civilian life as second lieutenants. And we had to go down to Miami Beach and spend 6 weeks, actually most of the time doing close order drill. And for a person who's in the Air Corps to do first close order drill is one of the strangest things that possibly could exist, I suppose. Well, anyway, we had close order drill under a broiling sun at Miami, where we worked about 8 hours a day. And then, there was no air conditioning then, and we'd go back to our hotel, and the German subs off the East Coast had been active, and so there was a blackout. So you couldn't even open your window, and it was blacked out with a curtain over it. And you couldn't even open your window. You'd go down there, no air conditioning in those hotels. It's just a wonder we didn't die before we were sent out. Yeah, and then we were, after 6 weeks, then we were sent to mostly various places in Texas where most of the Air Corps camps were. And I was sent to San Angelo, and Virgie joined me there. And for 3 years I taught bombing and navigation at San Angelo, Army Air Force Base in San Angelo.
What background did you have for teaching that? Out of what you'd...
I didn't have any, but that makes no difference to the Army. That isn't the way the Army runs things. They one of my colleagues in this thing was